We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the CHGO White Sox post-game show, coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Eckerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. We're being produced today by Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. You can follow the show at CHGO _ White Sox. Make sure you hit that like button if you are joining us. And if you haven't yet, hit that subscribe button. A big day in Chicago on Thursday as the Bears have the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. We have you covered with a live draft party on Thursday and Friday. If you want to go to the Friday event, there still are tickets. So check that out at allchgo.com/events. Thank you to Chris, our newest diehard, right? I want to make sure that it's Chris. Chris. Paul was yesterday. So thank you to Chris for becoming our new diehard.
Chris Paul.
There you go. Shout out Chris Paul. My favorite Wake Forest basketball player. I don't think I can.
Really?
I don't think I can.
Tim Duncan?
Randolph Childress?
Okay. Well, Tim Duncan, I could probably.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, Rodney Rogers?
Who are you talking about? Is this the Rodney Dangerfield thing over again?
No, Rodney Rogers is a Wake Forest Demon Deacon.
Rodney Rogers.
When
did he play?
In the 90s.
Okay, I wasn't alive.
Well, you were. In the 90s,
yeah, you were. Hey, I mean, he played in 2004. There you go. I wasn't watching too much Clipper basketball in 1997. Anyways.
Oh, Loy Vaught.
You say Mo Vaughn?
No, Loy Vaught.
Loy Vaught. Classic Clipper.
L-O-Y.
Loy Vaught.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're not going down this road. We are joining you after a White Sox winner. They win 5-4, a very tight game in the ninth inning, but the White Sox were able to... Oh, they pitched to Byron Buxton, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, and they have Andrew Benintendi patrolling left field, don't they?
I feel so bad for him today because he did...
You do?
Because he did the thing that he's been waiting to do all year. He got a big hit in a big moment. He got one of their biggest hits of the season to date, which is admittedly not a high bar to clear, but he got one of their biggest hits of the season to date. That could have been a real monkey off the bat moment, and then he makes another mistake in the field.
Womp, womp, womp. The Sox lose 6-5 in the ninth inning. Eric Fetty had a great day. We'll talk about Fetty. We'll talk about Eloy Jimenez's big home run. We'll talk about Benny's hit, but let's start in the ninth inning. And Sarah, if you want to throw up that catch probability graphic here, because obviously the biggest issue in the ninth inning is throwing a fastball to Byron Buxton. No? I mean, that's an issue right there. Made it 5-5. The last one I sent about the catch probability. Thank you. This is from @notcaughtbot. So this takes catch probability from StatCast. It's Ryan Jeffers' double, and it gives you the catch odds, the probability from StatCast on the Ryan Jeffers' double. Andrew Benintendi had an 89% chance of catching that. He was lucky that it was a double. Benintendi not able to catch up to it, but a ball that's hit 44 degrees off the bat at 75.8 miles per hour is a duck snort, one that just hangs up there, and all of our
Five
reaction
seconds?
What does that say?
Hang 4.8 seconds.
Right, 4.8 seconds there. So basically 5 seconds to close in on it, and we even heard John Schriffen be like, oh, what do you say? A huge misplay by Andrew Benintendi. What's our thoughts here? Is it more egregious that Benny's not catching that ball, or is it more egregious throwing a fastball to Byron Buxton?
I would think that White Sox, and Ethan Katz has been here the last couple of years, he understands that Byron Buxton's a no-go zone. You can't walk him there because he represents the tying run. But as you said, you, as Stephen Wilson, have a nice sweeper and know that this guy can hit a fastball, especially when you put that White Sox uniform on. So, yeah, I think that's the more egregious thing, that we don't have a scouting report on Byron Buxton after all these years, and you can't let him be the one that was to beat you. I told you guys, like, the good thing about the bottom of the ninth is that Byron Buxton cannot walk us off. The bad thing is he can tie this game, and right there he tied the game. It's just so, like, frustrating, but also this is every day that they play the Minnesota Twins when Byron Buxton's in the game. You should never pitch to him. When you have a chance to pitch around him, make him swing at a ball that you want him to swing at, but not a fastball middle up. What are we doing? It was a bad location, too. Like, he crushed that ball.
Mm-hmm. But then you get to the play with Benintendi that puts two runners in scoring position, and it should have just been an out. I mean, this is a guy, we've been talking about this for a while now, a week or two now, with how Benintendi doesn't look good out there in left field right now. He's letting a lot of balls drop. This is not just a tonight problem. He's letting a lot of balls drop in front of him. Obviously, he's made some notable misplays. He made about three of them in that Phillies game on Sunday. But this is a guy who, this wasn't trying to do too much, right? This wasn't what we talked about Sunday all day, where it was like he's trying to get out of a slump. He's trying to do something, make something happen by overthrowing the cutoff man twice and trying to throw the ball, try to throw a guy out at home, even though there's no shot at doing so. This is a routine play, or close to it. And he took, as John Schriffen said on the broadcast, his first step was back. And then you had a very wonky looking route on the way to a ball that obviously ended up dropping for a double, sets up a walk-off single for the Twins. So you say, what's more egregious there? I think it's got to be the play that should have been made, rather than, you got to execute better on your pitches to a hitter that dangerous in Byron Buxton. Mm-hmm. But at least there you can say that guy's really good, and he did the one thing that he needed to do in that moment. The one thing Andrew Benintendi needed to do in that moment, he didn't do.
Well, and the other one that we're not mentioning as well, I think, is Michael Kopech in the eighth inning. You know, a guy not doing his job. Trevor Larnach, with a runner on, gets a fastball at the knees in pretty much the same location that Kopech threw the pitch before. So it was a pitch that he saw, a release point that he saw, a pitch trail that he saw, and he hit it basically to the moon. I was
going to say Canada, but the moon's even farther.
Or Canada. Hey, a very, very far place. So just really three huge mistakes there from the Sox that let this game get absolutely away from them.
And I mean, you know, certainly less loud in terms of that it wasn't a home run, but let's not let Jordan Leisure off the hook either. He gave up a run today. Eric Fetty was fantastic for six innings, and then the three relievers that Pedro brought in all gave up runs in this game.
Yeah, it's a game you can't lose. 5-2 in the eighth inning. You can't lose. I have questions about Pedro's use of Michael Kopech before Stephen Wilson. If you're going to do Michael Kopech, that would be assuming a six-out save. And I know he gave up the home run, and I don't know if that would change his mind in that regard, but wouldn't you swap the guys for Stephen Wilson doing the eighth-inning stuff and then Michael Kopech doing the ninth-inning stuff? So that's the problem I have also with, you know, it's just a weird use of the bullpen. And then also we'll get to how he took out Gavin Sheets, who is the White Sox best hitter for the year
in
the
eighth, on his birthday.
Yeah, for a left-hander was on the bump
for a pinch hitter
for Robbie Grossman, who is a switch hitter, and then they promptly changed the pitcher. But if this game was to get into the extras, you would have had Robbie Grossman leading off the 10th inning with Mendick at second instead of your best hitter, Gavin Sheets. That's why at that time it was 3-2, I believe, and you don't take out your best hitter that late in the game unless you need, he's at second base, he's slow of foot, you need a fast runner. You don't take him out for Robbie Grossman. Not
well,
at all.
Well, the thing that's weird is that, like, had we not known the circumstance, right, I would say, oh, they took out Gavin Sheets late and they replaced him with Robbie Grossman. I would have said, oh, defensive replacement. You got a late lead. That's what you do, right? You take out a guy who's a potential liability in right field for a guy who's a lot more sure-handed with the glove. That's something that happens in every baseball game almost every day, right? But to take him out on the offensive side of things is different. That's a different circumstance. I think the bullpen stuff is interesting. I'm interested to hear from Pedro what he's thinking, because obviously he's explained many, many times they have this mapped out far in advance. There are plenty of people who say, hey, if you're going to end up going through the tougher part of the lineup in the eighth inning, put the best pitcher in there in the eighth inning. So again, at first blush, not a terrible thing, but the way that he's used Michael Kopech so many times already this year for multiple inning outings, for multiple inning save tries, it worked once, but it seems that it's max of desperation. And when you've got Steven Wilson available in your bullpen, when you've got John Brebbia available in your bullpen, guys who are veteran dudes who you, in the case of Brebbia, invested money in to be a back-end bullpen guy, mm-hmm. That is the interesting call for me. Not even necessarily like we've talked about that he would be used in the eighth or the ninth. It just seemed that the reason Kopech didn't pitch the ninth is because he threw too many pitches in the eighth, right? And so I don't know. The stuff we've heard from Pedro earlier in the year was eventually the ideal situation is Michael Kopech gets the ball in the ninth inning and gets to be the closer. And if we've got a late lead, we're going to give it to Michael in the ninth inning. Where is that? When does that start? You know what I mean? Because it's not a situation where you've burned through your whole bullpen or anything like that. That could have started tonight. You could have done that tonight. I'm sure he had reasons for doing it the way he did, and I'm sure we'll see them reported from Minnesota when that happens. But certainly questions that I would have if I were talking to Pedro this evening.
And we appreciate Peyton's super chat of $5. Here's $5. Somebody go off on Pedro. My soul needs it. Sure. Why not the Mario money?
Vinny pretty much, did it in a calm, relaxed fashion instead of raising his voice.
I don't know if that's worth $5, but... Hey. Well,
I did have this written down yesterday, and we didn't talk about it, but it was the idea of, what's the game plan if you fire Grifol and you put in Charlie Montoyo? And I brought up that I think that people who are kind of screaming and clamoring for Pedro Grifol to get fired have like an accountability kink, that they have somebody at their job that they truly just hate. And every day they walk in, they hate Sarah or Jana.
Sarah.
I didn't really.
What did I do?
It was just on my mind. I actually didn't realize.
Wow. Sean is.
Sarah. Throwing you under the bus.
You didn't do anything.
Nope.
I tried to think of a generic name.
I try my best every day.
You do. You do. Sean, it's not on purpose.
Sean, clear your schedule for tomorrow. You'll be heading to HR mediation.
All right, let's try that again. Maybe that person hates John at their work, right? Maybe John Doe, or maybe Jane Doe, right? Yes. Maybe they hate John or Jane Doe, and they really just want to see that person get fired. But every day they show up, and John or Jane are at work, and they have to deal with it. And they feel the same thing with Pedro. They look in the dugout, and they see, John A. Sample, or... apparently Sarah. So my bad. Hopefully that was good enough and worth the $5 there, Peyton, that I said that. I can't get too mad. Because it's not just Pedro making the mistakes. It's Kopech. Like 5 of his 13 fastballs were thrown down and below the belt. We've talked about his fastball effectiveness being up in the zone. He wasn't able to execute. Jordan Leisure, you brought up, he wasn't perfect tonight, gave up a run, and got this lead even closer. The White Sox offense, there were those two moments where Benintendi was able to drive in the two runs. Aloy Jimenez was able to move from first base to second base and get that extra run in as well. Aloy was able to put one over the fence.
Give Danny Mendick credit for stealing third to open up. Second base for Aloy to steal as well.
Danny Mendick shines again.
He did shine. He shined tonight.
But it just comes down to the White Sox not being able to execute. And if you think that is on Grifol and you think that he's a scam artist, I don't know what to tell you. But what can he do? There are 26 men that are on this roster. There's plenty of coaching staffs, coaches a part of his staff as well. And there's an entire organization that we know that is not has not been up to snuff. I mean, Chris Getz talked about all the things that they added this offseason. It's only been, what, 24 games or so? Like, I don't think this is all on Pedro. This is just an organization that reeks head to toe.
No, like, I agree. The thing with Pedro and why he would need to be fired is just because of this team is historically bad, so somebody has to pay for it. But you guys are right. 26 men have to do their job. We can disagree with him bringing in Kopech when he did and when Steven Wilson in the ninth. But those guys got to execute. They're getting paid to execute when Pedro brings them in. They weren't, you know, rusty or they weren't tired. Like, Michael Kopech hasn't pitched in a couple days. Now, Steven Wilson pitched yesterday, so that might, you know, be a thing, but you're supposed to be pitching back-to-back days, and it's cold conditions. You should be in more of an advantageous fashion for a pitcher than the hitters. So those players have to come through when Pedro puts them in, even if they think, and I think, it's a mistake. Like, when he did change Gavin Sheets to Robbie Grossman, Robbie Grossman has to come through. He did not. He struck out. And then in that same eighth inning, when Andrew Vaughn struggles and strikes out, he has to come through right there. Like, there's ducks in the pond ready for you to take advantage and turn your season around. You didn't come through. Luckily, you had Andrew Benintendi get that two RBI single because you guys talked about it. Eloy Jimenez moving to second to get that run over there. And he executed, but these players have to execute like that when Pedro puts them in there. Even though we are putting something on this, on a Pedro, majority of the blame goes on those actual players who lost the game. And Pedro is the figurehead of those players, so, well, he'll get the blame of it.
And even, too, if we're talking about Pedro's bullpen management late, we've already brought up that we had questions about it, that it struck as odd or interesting. It's not like Steven Wilson is some bum at the end, you know, at the end of the depth chart. Like, using Michael Kopech in the eighth wasn't a mistake, because it was then Pedro turned around and was like, oh no, I don't have anybody else to pitch in the ninth inning. Like, Steven Wilson is good. He's been good this year. He should be able to get those outs. He needs to execute as well. The idea that those moves were the reason they lost the game is only because those guys lost the game.
We have to take a break, but I want to push back a little bit on that, just because Brebbie has been activated. He's been activated for 2 days. We haven't seen him.
Right.
Steven Wilson obviously has been used, and you're putting him in to a situation against likely their best hitter. And he goes down 1-0 because he tries to get a fastball inside, and we see it all the time. Like, hey, you don't want to walk this guy because you got what's his face on deck. Well, you don't want to, mess around a Buxton because he's going to do what he does and hit a homer. And he threw a fastball middle. What do you expect? The amazing athlete that finished top three in MVP voting once is going to hit a home run 110 miles per hour over the fence. Like, that's just what happens. I think that I would have liked to seen Brebbia. I would have liked to see maybe Kopech against Buxton. I know that you have Larnick, who just hit a million foot homer against you,
Kopech,
but still.
And Kopech just did the exact same thing you're complaining about with Buxton with Sal Perez last week.
That's true. Yeah. It's all about the players executing as well. Hit that thumbs up button if you appreciate hanging out with us. We're going to take a break and let you know about some of our sponsors, like Lucy, Herb.
It's a new sponsor about Lucy. They're made for your nicotine routine and delivered straight to your door. It's 100% pure nicotine, always tobacco-free. You could choose your form of pouches, breakers, or gum. You can choose your strength also with 2 milligram through 12 milligram. The 2 milligram is suitable for someone who just uses nicotine sparingly and infrequently. 4 to 8 is more likely for a satisfied if you have an everyday nicotine routine, and 12 might be for you if you've been underwhelmed by the other effects of nicotine products. You can choose your flavor, mint, apple, ice, espresso, mango, and more, and save yourself from the weekly gas station stop by signing up on a monthly subscription for Lucy. Save 15% on that with no commitment and cancel anytime. Nicotine pouches, but with a tiny capsule inside. This is what the Lucy Breakers are. The capsule contains liquid flavor that saturates the pouch before it's even in use. Break it with your teeth, get it saturated, and boom, instant nicotine releases when you need it. And one of the reviews, and whew, friends, this is a funny-ass review to me. The berry citrus is juicy as heck. So much flavor being tossed around. It's like an orgasm in my mouth. Thank you, Lucy. You so juicy. Ooh, goodness gracious. What are these people doing? Making me laugh too much. Let's level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to lucy.co/CHGO socks and use the promo code CHGO socks to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. That's lucy.co/CHGO socks and use the code CHGO socks for 20% off and always free shipping. And here comes the fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age. And every order is age verified. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Thanks, Herb. I want to let you know about our friends over at Circa Sportsbook. They are the world's largest sportsbook, and you can download the world's largest sportsbook at your fingertips with the Circa Sportsbook Illinois app over at circasports.com/Illinois-app. That's circasports.com/Illinois-app. They encourage bettors to download and explore all sports betting apps available because they are the world's largest sportsbook, and they are trying to offer you the best lines possible. You will see that if not all the time, most of the time, Circa's lines are the best for sports bettors. And they are the best app for sports bettors because they do not limit players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do limit winning players. So if you had that feeling, that old familiar feeling, that summer feeling that Jonathan Richman wrote about, that you know the Minnesota Twins were going to come back and kick the White Sox ass, hey, you could have made money. And if you just kept betting anytime the White Sox had a lead, I think you'd probably make a decent amount of money just betting the plus money team. So go over and check out our friends at Circa Sportsbook if you have a problem. They'll have real people that will take care of you as well. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app, and they're going to be throwing a party with us this Thursday and Friday. The tickets for Thursday are sold out, but we do have tickets for Friday. So if you do want to come see the Bears draft party over at Joe's on Wheat Street with our friends at Circa Sports, come check that out at allchgo.com/Circa. Or no, allchgo.com/events. If you or somebody you know may have a problem gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Text GMB to 833-234. Visit areyoureallywinning.com. Okay, let's get into Eric Fetty. I know a lot of people are talking about Vaughn. A lot of people are talking about Pedro in the chat. But let's go into a little good stuff here, all right? It is all terrible. It is all awful. The White Sox are 3-20, but Eric Fetty had a career high, 11 Ks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of the night, though, was almost like it wasn't all terrible, right? Like, even on a night when multiple, and you could even say many to an extent, things went right for the White Sox. Still, nothing can go right for the White Sox. But boy, Eric Fetty was probably the thing that went the most right for them this evening. He looked like the guy who dominated Korean baseball last year. Or at least he looked like the stats of the guy who dominated Korean baseball last year. I know it was such a big question. All right, tremendous work over there, Eric Fetty. Now you're back in the big leagues. Is it going to be more like that? Or is it going to be more like the last time you were in the big leagues and you didn't do very well when you pitched for the Nationals? But tonight he was fantastic. The 11 strikeouts were obviously the highlight. I think he struck out two guys in literally every inning except the final ones, the sixth inning when he only got one. But listen, this is the first time he's completed six innings in a White Sox uniform, but now he's only given up one run in his last two starts. He's starting to look like kind of not just the very good presence, but, man, a reliable presence, right? I mean, we had nothing but question marks about this starting rotation coming into the year. I'm not sure any of them have really been answered, but Eric Fetty is probably doing the best to answer his own personal ones as he has looked very, very good lately and looked exceptionally good tonight.
Just a masterful job. He ran into some problems in the first inning, probably jitters, and that's where the Twins got to him. Got the first two guys out like his predecessor got in the game before this in Jonathan Cannon on Monday, and then ran into single, double, run scores. So after that, just calmed down and struck everybody out. Like Vinny said, two strikeouts per inning except for the last one that he worked. That's where his career high, 11 strikeouts come from. And I'm just wondering, like, you have this type of performance and this pitcher that's gone through the rotation. What, is his fourth start now?
Like fifth, I believe.
Fifth start? So you're seeing him do well, except for probably his first start versus the Tigers was kind of shaky. But are we going to see Eric Fetty past August? If I were White Sox, this team, I would be looking for teams to be trading for this guy, because right now, maybe not a one, but a two on some other team that's looking for a playoff starting pitcher. Like, we're just talking to the Cubs people. Like, they need starting pitchers, and everybody around the league needs starting pitcher. That guy who was the Korean MVP and Cy Young Award winner looked like that guy tonight.
Yeah, I think a two's a little bit high, but still, I mean, a three or a four. I mean, we saw Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, be of interest to the Dodgers, Lance Lynn to the Dodgers as well. Jordan Montgomery burst onto the scene. I don't think the Rangers expected that type of performance, and he was fantastic for them. You know, I mean, as long as it's a guy that can give them innings. But no, he was fantastic. 34% called strike plus whiff percentage for Eric Fetty, above the major league average of 30%. 95 pitches through six innings. He was extremely efficient as well. He had 83 pitches through five innings. So again, only 12 in that last inning. He had 17 whiffs as well, which was huge for Eric Fetty. And you talk about the break as well. Plus 3 inches of horizontal break compared to his yearly average on his sinker. So he's getting great movement on that sinker and great movement on his splitter as well. Plus 3 inches of horizontal break on his splitter, and no lack of vertical movement in his sinker. So it was getting the same amount of vertical movement, but it was also having a little bit more arm run. So nice to see the movement on those pitches, and obviously effective getting 11 Ks.
And I haven't seen the pitch breakdown from the games before, but it seemed like he didn't shelf his sweeper, but he used it more less often today, because I think you say sweepers don't really work versus lefties, and that's what the Twins are really offering, a bunch of lefties in their lineup. And so he's like, no, I'm not going to throw that. Sinker's going to work out today. The splitter's going to fade. It's going to be a power splitter. So he used the pitches and accustomed it to what the Twins are, instead of just like, okay, I got to use my pitches. No, he adjusted to what the team is giving him, and had a great performance.
No, truly, he was great against negating those lefties. 37% cutter today from Eric Fetty. That usually sits at 18%. 34% sinker. That usually sits at 34%. The sweeper usually sits at 26%. That was down to 5%. And then the splitter usually sits around 20% usage. This was at 24% today.
That's good.
Yeah, and I mean, Herb, to your question, it's going to be interesting. I think it really depends, obviously, on how the rest of the season goes for him. Will Eric Fetty be this guy on a regular basis? The wrinkle there, though, is how much does Chris Getz need to get for one guy at this trade deadline, right? I mean, we talked about during the offseason how it really seemed like his only opportunity to inject a bunch of talent into this organization was Dylan Cease, because they didn't have any interest in trading Luis Robert Jr. He did that, and I don't know how folks feel about what he got for Dylan Cease, right? So now, is it come along where if the only player that is tradable off of this team at the deadline is someone like Eric Fetty, who, let's remember, they signed to a 2-year deal. Like, their plans when they made that contract agreement was for him to be here for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But is there a lot of pressure on what the return needs to be? Does that dictate anything, or does the market just dictate it? Because we keep talking about, like, oh, what's the best case scenario of Mike Clevinger? What's the best case scenario of Tommy Pham or whoever, right? Is it just a prospect at the deadline? What does that Eric Fetty return look like come then? Obviously, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The guy has only made 5 starts, and he's got, you know, this is probably the first one that really stands out. But
2.73 ERA. Hey, come on.
He's been good. He's been good, no doubt about it. But I'm just saying, like, what does that trade need to look like in order for it to happen at the deadline, in order to make it worth it, you know, to use the old phrase that you use a lot, juice being worth the squeeze.
I think we have a break that we're coming up on, but let's get to that super chat from TCR Brad. We appreciate it. Brad, $12 super chat, saying, For development purposes, I should read a book. Why not bring a guy like Nastrini up from Charlotte? Things would be much more palatable and a better watch with some of the young guns in the lineup. Coffee on me, gents. We appreciate that, TCR Brad, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and it's not really about Nastrini not being up to snuff or Nastrini not being the guy. We think Nastrini will be up and making probably 20 starts for the White Sox this year. It just came down to options.
Yeah, it was a roster kind of thing. They're bringing back John Brebbia off the injured list. They need a guy who has options left that they can send to the minor leagues without you know, having to jettison someone unnecessarily from the 40-man roster. Nick Nastrini could go down and did. I can't imagine that will last very long, his time back in the minor leagues. But certainly we've been asking this question a lot. You know, the value of having some of these veterans eat up at bats and eat up innings, what is it at the end of the day? Because we know that a guy like Nick Nastrini at least has a chance to be part of the long-term future of this team. There are a lot of guys on the major league roster who are going to be gone at the end of this year, no matter how they perform.
Thanks very much, Brad. And good guy. Photog for the Champagne Room, and also does some things for Rockford Ice Hogs. So go follow him on the Twitter sphere and IG.
Do you have any thoughts about calling up guys like Nastrini? I mean, I know I saw some chatter for Oscar Colas as well. Maybe Colas instead of Grossman. Do you care about that right now in April, or is that something that, you know, we're for sure certain going to get in June?
I mean, if Oscar Colas is doing well down in AAA, which I think he is, yeah, bring him up here and start him for a good portion of the thing. But, you know, you have the roster crunch that's happening right now already, where Gavin Sheets is taking those right field spots. And when Luis Robert Jr. comes back, Dominic Fletcher might be taking those right field spots. I just want somebody, as Vinny said, that might be here next year manning those spots from here on out if they're ready for it. I love Robbie Grossman, what he does with the getting on base type of thing, but otherwise he's just a dude that should be on somebody else's team that's competing. So give Oscar Colas as many at-bats on the major league level to get a definitive thing if he is in your plans or if he is not. And if he is, you have to see him at the major league level and doing well at the major league level. I mean, we scoffed today as we were looking at Lenin Sosa's AAA stats from today, hitting a bunch of home runs. That's what, a triple short of the cycle type of thing. But he's a 4A player. He comes up to the major leagues every time, and he's Lenin Sosa, a major league player that doesn't hit anything, goes back to AAA and crushes a ball. You need some answers on him. You need some answers on Oscar Colas, and you're not going to get those by having them down to AAA because they've proven that AAA is no challenge for them.
And look what they're learning from Danny Mendick. He shined in two games already. All right.
That is my man. I love him.
We're going to take a break. We're going to let you know about our friends over at Salerno's Pizza and over at Ray CDJR. Vinny, do you want to let people know about our friends over at Salerno's and the great deal they have?
Well, you see, usually I'm telling people about beer, and that's my favorite thing to drink.
Beer.
But tonight, we've changed it up. I'm going to tell you about pizza, which is my favorite thing to eat. So stop by Salerno's on tap, located at 1201 West Grand Avenue in Chicago's West Town neighborhood, and enjoy the tavern-style pizza, as well as ice-cold beers. Whether you are headed to the game, want to watch it live on the big-screen TVs they got over there, or you're just watching from home, they've got you covered. Go ahead and go to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444. And how about this, guys? You mentioned CHGO. You get half off the pizza. Whoa. That's a hell of a deal.
Hell of a deal.
So go ahead and head to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444 for more information. Mention CHGO and get half off of that pizza they got over by there.
Pizza topping. Go.
Huh? What'd you say?
My favorite pizza topping.
Oh, sausage.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it for you? We talked about this in the car the other day. Sausage.
Yeah. Okay. I enjoy adding a pepperoni.
Spinach
from Sarah. And prosciutto.
Ooh. Oh, look at you, fancy.
That's some fancy stuff right there.
Prosciutto.
I like, mercy. You know, a little pepperoni fancy. And onion, you know?
It's just pepperoni and onion.
Wow. Pepperoni and onion. Okay. Yeah, who doesn't love some onion?
You're the oldest 26-year-old ever.
Okay, all right. Well, hey. Whatever. I have taste, all right? I want to let you know, though, about our friends over at Ray CDJR. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? If you are, we have some great news for you. Our partner, Ray Cross Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram in Fox Lake, is celebrating the Jeep Celebration event all month long. And do you know what that means? You'll be able to rave about their savings on a wide selection of inventory. For a limited time, lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo Altitude for $439 a month for 39 months. And if that Grand Cherokee isn't big enough for you, check out the third row and lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited L for $479 a month for 39 months. At Ray CDJR, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest inventories and drive home with more money in your pocket than you'd expect, thanks to Ray's price promise. So don't miss out. Shop great deals all month long and save big, because Ray CDJR makes buying a new vehicle more affordable than ever, and they make taking care of your car more affordable than ever, because just for listening to CHGO, you can get a free oil change when you mention CHGO at the service center or mention CHGO when booking online at raycdjr.com/service. But you have to schedule before April 30th. So if you are in the market for a new vehicle, then check out the team at Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram, because they are the only team we recommend. Visit them today on Route 12 in Fox Lake. For more information, visit RayCDJR in Fox Lake or RayCDJR.com. Serving the community since 1963.
These are some incredible deals.
Yeah. Incredible
deals. Free oil change. Half price pizza. Amazing.
Can it get any better than this?
No.
No?
Just go around town and mention CHGO to our people and you'll get free stuff or half off of things.
How about that?
Imagine that.
I don't know if it's a guarantee, but try it.
I mean, at least in two places.
Yes. Let's go to Minidar. He brought up that trading mid guys really won't get that much of a return.
Yeah.
And that's fair, but also I don't think we expected the return for the Dodgers giving up Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly to be so fruitful. Nick Destrini looks like a starter for at least the next 2 years for the Chicago White Sox at worst. And Jordan Leisure, even though he did give up that run today, he's a young pitcher trying to figure it out in the bullpen, and he's looked promising. They already have two major leaguers by trading away two major leaguers. I think that they showed at least a really great deadline last year, and hopefully with them being in such a dire place, they're able to get something for Eric Fetty. Maybe Brad Keller's able to give them something that interests the team. Maybe Clevenger's able to do that. Johnny Cueto was just signed by the Rangers. Teams are looking for pitching. I think 37% of starting pitchers have been injured. So them being able to find somebody off this pile heap, trash heap, if you want to be unkind, could be fruitful for the White Sox. Maybe it won't be Nestrini or Leisure-like, but maybe it's another player that's 18 or 19, and we saw that what, you know, a James Shields trade yielded the White Sox. So, you know, you just got to get lucky.
Well,
what
it yielded the Padres.
Right. Yeah. Well, the White Sox got James Shields. That wasn't good enough.
And think about it, too. Like, with the new playoff format, the reason why the White Sox got all the stuff they got back for trading Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez last year, you get Edgar Carroll back, and that guy looks like he's going to be a superstar. Same thing with the trade that Sean just mentioned. And while Corey Lee doesn't play that much, he looks like a major league catcher, and you got him for Kendall Graveman. All those players were having mid to bad years. So they got actual major league players back from a team that was pretty bad, and the players that they trade away, most of them were having bad seasons. Imagine if you have a good season from Fetty, and the White Sox being one of the teams that are actually sellers. There's so many teams delusional now about their being a playoff prospect, and last year's World Series is kind of helping that, because there was two wild card teams in the World Series, and so everybody's like, okay, we just need to get into that wild card and we're good. And you know who can help us? Eric Fetty or Steven Wilson or Michael Kopech. And all these players will be bidded on by a multitude of teams. And so the price gets driven up. And yes, you think they're mid on the White Sox, but somebody else is looking at them and saying, that's the key for us going to the playoffs or not. And they'll be willing to trade you players that you probably don't think they'll be worth.
And two, it might not get you Nestrini and Leisure, but maybe you get a Nestrini. Maybe you get a Leisure. Like, it's not Kelly and Lynn, but you look at what Lance Lynn did in 119 innings last year, a 6.47 ERA, and they were still able to get two pieces that turned into major leaguers. If they're able to get a major league piece for Eric Fetty that will be able to play for them from 2025 to 2030, that's a win.
Yeah, I mean, I get the point. I get the point that's being made right there. Joe Kelly, Lance Lynn, track records a mile long, and probably the Dodgers had a pretty high level of confidence of what they were getting in what those guys could be. It just turned out that Lance Lynn had a horrible season last year. He kept on having a horrible season into the playoffs, and is part of the reason the Dodgers' playoff stay was so short last year. But I could see where a team would be willing to take that risk given what he had been in the past. But, you know, you got to look at the other side of the coin, too, and say, okay, yeah, Eric Fetty doesn't have the track record that those two guys have in the major leagues. But if he's hot come July, then that's gonna get you something. But, again, we're a long way from there, and we're a long way from knowing whether Eric Fetty will be hot come July.
Yeah. Who is hot is, as Titty Boy mentioned in the comments, the affiliates went 4-0 today. So, hey, we'll take it. The White Sox, as an organization, went 4-1. Not a lot of people are talking about the four victories. A lot of people are harping on the one loss. So, just saying.
Negative town. All these White Sox fans always got to travel to negative town. Pessimist. Look at the positivity.
Pessimist media. Us. All right. Sarah, if we can go to some of these crazy graphs we have, we're going to give a shout out to @SecretBase on Twitter for putting these together. You can flash one of them, and that's the perfect one. I have that one up. This is the White Sox versus the Mendoza line. That red line is the 200 team batting average, and as you can see, as games went from 1 to 22, the White Sox have been struggling to stay above that Mendoza line. I believe for only three games, they've been above that Mendoza line. I'm not sure, because I haven't done the math, if they will go over the Mendoza line after this game, but going 8 for 34, a .235 average, that's above the Mendoza line. So that's progress. When Pedro Grifol says, hey, we're putting in the work to try to go out there and, you know, push forward, I guess it really wasn't the offense's fault today.
I mean, it wasn't. I think you're being sarcastic over there at least a little bit. But usually. But it's true. It wasn't the offense's fault today. And the offense, you know, did their part, so to speak. Obviously, Andrew Benintendi is probably the guy who comes up in the biggest moment there with the insurance runs late. Obviously, that game could have flipped a lot earlier than it did had that hit not come through. So, listen, five runs for this White Sox team is one of their better outings of the year to date. I'm sure they don't want to be in a position where that is the case. But if you're going to talk about was this day better than most from the White Sox offense, it absolutely was. Was this day worse than most from the White Sox bullpen? It absolutely was.
Yeah, you can't do anything about the offense. There was a couple times that I already highlighted that they struggled to come through, but Andrew Benintendi picked them up. When Robbie Grossman failed to get Danny Mendick over to third, Danny Mendick took it on himself and stole third base himself. Same thing with Andrew Vaughn. When he struggled to get the runners over, Eloy Jimenez, they didn't play him. He's like, all right, I'm going to take second then. Cool. And then Andrew Benintendi came through. These things don't happen with the White Sox. And so I applaud the offense. Eloy Jimenez has been struggling this whole year. And now he has a second home run of the year, which is rocketed out of there. And John Triffin, man, that man, anything positive, that man just goes off. He was the most excited I've ever heard for a 3-19 team, like we're about to win the World Series. That's good for him, man. Keeping that positivity up on a 3-20 team. Good job, brother.
And Eloy Jimenez, too. Second home run of the year. Second home run in 3 days.
Yep.
We saw him walking a little bit last week. It's not nothing that he's doing right now. Obviously, the total picture is still not something to be proud of. But if you want to shrink it down to the last week or the last few days, It's possible that he's going to be an actual middle of the order bat in terms of the production if nights like this and nights like the last few keep happening.
And we've seen hope obviously develop with a player like Eloy Jimenez. People before, maybe at this company, maybe not at this company, have predicted in many seasons that the White Sox would be led by Eloy Jimenez in home runs. Maybe someone at this table picked a 40-plus home run season from Eloy Jimenez.
It still happened.
I picked a 41 homer, so I think it was, I actually had the highest prediction, so I was more just talking about myself. Maybe there's somebody at the deadline, if he is still healthy and he does have a surging power outage, maybe he's one of those players that, again, they can flip at the deadline, even though, you know, he has that $13 million salary. It might not be too much for the Sox to flip. Danny Mendick also helping the White Sox stay above that that Mendoza line. So there you go. I'm not saying Danny Mendick's going to be a trade piece, but Danny Mendick is going to save them from being a team that hits 200 or below.
I mean, he's got four hits in 2 days.
He's so good. He's got a Corey.
Only one of them has gone for extra bases. But guess who? Danny Mendick right now has been in the major leagues for 2 days. He has as many hits this season as Jose Abreu.
Yes. Yeah, and Danny Mendick twice the hits as Martin Maldonado.
Oh, that's even worse. All right, let's show the other bad graph. This one was from the morning of April 22nd, and it has changed. These are the White Sox versus every AL squad this season, and at the bottom is run differential, and on the left side is games above 500. And you can see there's some teams struggling there, like Houston, Minnesota, and obviously they've played the Sox, so they've closer to 500. Oakland struggling. You even have the Guardians up there in the top right because there's so many games above 500 and their run differential is so much better. The Sox, now after these two games, negative 17 games above 500. So I guess there are 17 games below 500. And then they have a run differential of negative 78. So I think kind of crazy that they are so much closer to a negative 100 run differential already. And again, we're not even at 25 games. It's been fun.
Yeah. I mean, This should have been a win. I would say it can't get worse. I said that the last two goddamn years, and it keeps on getting progressively worse. I thought we're at rock bottom. We're not. It's still got some shoveling to do. Goodness gracious. Like, that graph you just picked, it's like the axis is way off because they got to put the White Sox in there. It's got to continue down and over for the White Sox to fit into that graph because they're so woeful at offense.
It's disgusting to watch. And again, I think it's kind of surprising that Benintendi and Vaughn are now the 5 and 6 hitters. Do you want to talk a little bit about Vaughn here? He went 1 for 3. They talked about his hard exit velocities in his last two at-bats. At the end of the game, he got a single in his first at-bat. He also drew a walk. But I think what the biggest thing was you had runners on first and third, and then Vaughn ends up K-ing with runners on. And again, there's one out, so all he needs is a ball in the air to see if Mendick can run home.
Yeah, and it's not hard either. And I think was it going against Jay Jackson too?
Yes.
With like a 5 ERA, a guy that has been hit by other teams, not throwing hard. He was just throwing sliders, and Vaughn was not, you know, laying off of those sliders. And so, yeah, he's a run producer, and those are the opportunities you're supposed to take advantage of. Even if you're in a bad way, okay, all I need to do, ball in air, I know my guy Danny Miggs is going to score. That's the mindset you have to do. I said it during the at-bat, I'm like, get hit by the pitch, take a walk, put the ball in the air. Those are the worst outcomes you can have at the end of this at-bat, Andrew Vaughn. And no, he's like, I'm going to strike out. I know he's not trying to strike out, but as a person that is put in that position, you have to come through, and he did not. And time again this year, he has not come through. And I hope that John Schifrin's positivity and Steve's positivity about him is true, that he actually does come through, because he has been really terrible this year, and it's got to be with all these guys mental, because we know that Andrew Vaughn is not as bad as he looked. Whew, I hope he's not as bad as he looked, because that's another draft pick that's gone down the toilet.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hasn't been good.
Yeah, I mean, well, you think he's going to just magically turn into, you know, Christian Walker?
He should turn. I mean, yes, he should. It's year 4. Like, what haven't you figured out yet?
The White Sox haven't helped him figure it out.
Hey, sometimes you just got to say, F it. Lucas Giolito said, F it. Let me go back to my old pitching coach. You got to find another voice that's helping you out, that's helped you out in the past to get success. And whatever he needs to do, go fishing more, talk to his old Cal buddies, whatever. He needs to do it and find a solution, because this is unacceptable.
Is that leading me to believe that you are stumping for Andrew Vaughn's high school hitting coach to become the White Sox hitting coach?
Please. Something. I mean, he did some work with that guy, and whoever the Cal hitting coach was, he did some work. But whatever Marcus Thames is telling him, I know it's not his fault, it's not working. He needs to listen to some different voices, because he's having his worst season by far in his year 4.
It says his high school hitting coach was Henry Aaron.
Huh. Well, good resume.
I mean, it's going to be tough to get him.
I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
I'm not saying it's going to be tough to get him.
He died?
Yeah, he's currently not with us.
R.I.P. Hank Aaron. When did he die?
A couple years ago.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, R.I.P. Hank Aaron.
It's a sad night for Sean. He's not talking about Hank Aaron
died. Oh, Abe Vigoda, also dead, Sean.
Who?
Abe Vigoda.
He is?
He's currently dead.
R.I.P. Abe Vigoda. All right.
Ronald Reagan, also dead, Sean.
Is he really?
You just want me to tell you all the people are dead?
Next year, you're going to tell me Richard Nixon's passed away.
Not with us anymore.
Son of a bitch. Is Jimmy Carter still alive?
Yeah, no, he just passed. Sad.
Did he?
Rest in peace.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, no. His wife died. His wife died. Yeah. Sorry. Jimmy Carter's still with us. Out here
killing Jimmy Carter.
Come on, Herb.
He's going to be 100 in October.
He's been in hospice for a while because Jimmy Carter's a fighter.
I don't know.
This is taking a dark turn.
I don't know how to transition out of this. I do. We're going to talk a little bit maybe about John Schifrin. I do want to talk a little bit about the Sox framers, though. This was from Umpire Scorecard on Twitter. Over the past year or so far, the Guardians have gained 8 runs from framing. The White Sox have had an MLB worst -6.3 runs. Martin Maldonado, it seems like the soft skills are very much praised upon, but this is not a team that is picking up their pitchers behind the plate and really being able to, you know, gain strikes where other teams aren't. Is this becoming a big, massive issue? Are you worried about Martin Maldonado's, you know, ability to frame? I mean, are you more worried about his ability to hit?
Yes, both.
Which one is more worrying?
His framing, because that's why he's on the team, for his defense. And I know the metrics weren't good last year, but that's why they're on the team, for leadership and for actually being a good catcher. And today, you heard Steve Stone get on him a little bit for not blocking a ball that was in the dirt with his full body and trying to backhand. He's done that all year long. That just might be a product of him being, what, 37 years old and not, you know, not even not willing to do it, but just can't do it anymore because his body won't allow him to do it. But he needs to do something right to produce something to prove that he is actually worth starting these games on the White Sox. Because Corey Lee, for whatever you think about him, every time he goes out there, he gives you a quality at bat. And I think when he's catching, I see a little bit better catching and framing from him than I see him from Martin Maldonado. And maybe the numbers don't prove that out, but it doesn't look like Martin Maldonado has it like he had it before. So it might be time for him just to hang it up and the White Sox call up another catcher to replace him.
I still think they're getting what they want out of him. And I do think that that's valuable. I think it's probably more valuable for a young rotation than it is for one that has some veterans in it. Obviously, if Nastrini and Cannon and Crochet are going to continue to be a part of this rotation over the long haul of this season, I do think it's valuable to have Maldonado work with them. That being said, you know, when it comes to winning games, there's not much that he's doing right now. But what have we been talking about, right? It's about building for the future. It's about building for next year. And so while folks are perfectly justified to be upset with the fact that this guy's only got 2 hits this season and that it doesn't seem like a lot more are coming, I do think it's important that they understand that there is value to what he's doing on a daily basis, and it probably is helping those young pitchers out a lot.
I hope so. I really do hope so, just because, again, you talk about how good you want to be defensively and why you're going out and signing, you know, or trading for Nicky Lopez, signing Paul DeJong, etc., all the defense that they talked about. I think, you know, the biggest thing the free agent pitchers are looking at is who's my catcher, who's the guy behind me, who is helping me out. And again, the White Sox catchers have been mainly hurting the Sox pitching so far this year. Maybe he has been really helpful in pitching visits, in pitching mound visits, and helping with, you know, if guys are tipping or not. But I can't see that on Fangraphs, so he sucks.
Right. No, and listen, I think, that's a great joke, and it's probably what everybody's actually feeling in the comments here. And so when I say something like, oh, he's providing a lot of value, you're like, quantify it now. And I'm like, well, I can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry, I can't. I don't have a device to measure Jonathan Cannon's composure on the mound.
I would love for you, after Jonathan Cannon's next start, be like, how many runs do you think Martin Maldonado provided you? Was it -1, -+2, +1?
Yeah, I mean, defensive composure.
Just 7. There you go. I think we have over 150 people watching, so hit that thumbs up button. We got 73 likes so far. Hit that like spike if you haven't liked us yet. Get us up to at least 88 likes for old Luis Robert, or hey, at least 74 for Eloy Jimenez's home run. We just need one more, so be that person.
And Mailman Jack is digging Vinny's shirt. Grateful Dead.
Are you doing the sphere? It's a sphere-like logo right there.
We'll see. It's under consideration.
Okay. All right. I recommend it. I think it's fun because it's at least unique. All right.
Would John Mayer be back?
Yes.
Okay. I thought they were in their last concert.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did their last tour.
Yeah. Oh. Semantics.
Yes.
Come on.
A nice loophole for them to all make several million more dollars.
All right. I think we got at least time for one more segment, and I think I'll let you guys pick. Do we want to talk about John Triffin, the most shutouts in a season, or underrated White Sox?
I'll go with B.
You'll go
option B.
Most shutouts?
Yes.
Let's do that one.
Okay. All right. No John Schriffen. I guess I'll keep my unfiltered thoughts on J.J. McCarthy to myself. The most shutouts in a season so far, obviously the White Sox have had 8 shutouts in 23 games. They've been shut out in 8 times in 23 games so far. Most shutouts in a season, the 1908 St. Louis Cardinals. I'm not even sure if they were the Browns at that point, right? Mm. Weren't they the Browns at some point?
No, there's two different teams.
Jimmy Carter wasn't
the
even
Browns,
around.
I think.
He came to the Orioles.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So the Cardinals were shut out 33 times in 1908. In 1909, the Washington, I believe probably at that point, Senators, right? 1909?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They were shut out 30 times. And then the modern day record, post-1961, after integration, the 1963 Mets were shut out 30 times. The 1972 Texas Rangers were shut out 27 times. The 1967 Mets were shut out 26 times. And then the records for the 2000s, the 1978 Atlanta Braves at 24, and then the 2000s teams, the 2019 Miami Marlins and the 2022 Detroit Tigers at 22. So that's really, I think, the first milestone you have to watch is the 2000s record of 22 games being shut out. The White Sox have had 8 and 23 so far, so not a good percentage. What's 8 divided by 24? I feel like that's a big number.
Well, that's exactly a third.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, what, about 30% of the games so far, a little bit above 33% of the games so far, you've been shut out. That's not good.
No, not a good at all. But I don't think they'll be challenging those big time records because, yes, the White Sox offense is woeful, but they're getting reinforcements back pretty soon. Eloy Jimenez is here now, and you're going to get Luis Robert back within like a month and or 5 weeks from now, hopefully, and then eventually you'll get back Yoan Moncada. So these players, if they stay healthy, should be doing something for the offense at that time. I don't think they'll be going for, 33 shutouts in a year. That'd be a lot.
They're on pace.
They are.
Well, they're on pace for a lot more than that.
They're on pace for 100 shutouts, probably.
Not quite,
really.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not the math guy. Yeah. I don't know.
You are the math guy.
I'm not the math guy.
On this show?
I think Vinny's more of the math guy.
I do simple math, though.
I can't do simple math. What See? Am I doing? Am I doing equations? No, I'm just plugging stuff into my computer.
Yeah.
Hitting enter. Calculators are easy. Anyways, that's it for the show. Why don't you hit that thumbs up button if you haven't yet? We're one away from Luis Robert likes, so get us over that 88 mark. We appreciate Sarah for producing the show.
I mean, two of us do.
You try to fire Thank her. You. Earlier.
I'm not trying to fire anybody. I'm just saying, hey, if you're looking to fire Pedro Grifol, I think you probably just got somebody in your office that you also want fired. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Eckerwall23. And Anthony said, Bill, I'll give you a positive. Thursday, we are drafting Caleb Williams, hopefully to be our franchise quarterback. Hopefully, the White Sox are running on hope right now. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. And we will talk to you tomorrow for a post game of game 3 of 4 for the White Sox and Twin Series. Goodbye.
Y'all silly like the mayor.